Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This summer, America turns 250 years old, and there's no better way to celebrate than getting outside and exploring this great nation. One way to do that is to rent a camper or RV from Outdoorsy. Outdoorsy is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S., making it easy for anyone over 21 to rent an RV or camper without owning one. With Outdoorsy, you can drive it yourself, tow it, or even have it delivered and fully set up at your destination. With comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, and roadside assistance, Outdoorsy gives you the peace of mind you need when on the road. Outdoorsy is even the perfect option for your next out-of-state hunting or fishing trip. Right now, my listeners can have all service fees removed from their bookings in 2026 with code EMPIRE at Outdoorsy.com. That's Outdoorsy.com and use code EMPIRE at checkout to remove service fees. It's time to get outside and enjoy your summer. I've been trying underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network is brought to you by Moultrie Mobile. Transform the way you hunt with the all-new base cellular trail camera connected by the Moultrie Mobile app. Moultrie Mobile's industry-best app gives you complete control over your camera settings, up-to-the-minute updates from the field, and other interactive scouting tools on your smartphone or computer. Features like weather forecast, advanced species recognition, interactive maps, and a whole lot more. For more information and to make your purchase, visit www.moultriemobile.com.
From athletic stuff like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff like a half-mile stroll, get those steps in. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, brought to you by Vortex Optics. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the NFC Nine Finger Chronicles, that is. My name's Dan. I'm your host. Excellent episode today. Today we're going to be talking with David McElwain from Mississippi. And the dude went on a tear, not going to lie, $3 this year, one in Wisconsin, two in Mississippi. And he shares those stories with us today. We talk about a little strategy. If you listen close, like this is a story, right? So the strategy talk is at a little bit of a minimum. But if you listen closely and put the pieces of the puzzle together, just listen about terrain features and how they impact deer movement. And I'm going to tell you whether it's a big terrain feature or a very subtle terrain feature, they can have a huge impact in how deer kind of funnel through an area. And David explains that in his story. So listen closely for that. Man, I tell you what, this week in Iowa, it has been and is going to continue for a little while. It's nice. Like, it is nice. And I want to go out shed hunting, but I'll tell you this, man. I love doing what I'm doing. I love the network. I love being able to podcast all day. But as I grow, the responsibilities grow, and I haven't been able to take advantage of getting outside and dedicating an afternoon to shed hunting. So my buddy, he called me up and he's like, "Hey dude, I'm going to my main farm. His dad owns a farm. I'm going to go there and I'm going to shed hunt on Thursday. Do you want to come with?" And I was just like, so fast, I think I had a cramp in my forearm. It's like, boom, yes, I'm in. Let's do it. And so Thursday all day, I'm going to go shed hunting. I think we're leaving at about 8:00. I have to be back by 5 or 5:30 so I can make it to a concert. Excuse me, so I can make it to my daughter's spring concert or musical concert that she has. And yes, so I'm going shed hunting Thursday. And if all things play out well, if we cover his ground in a good amount of time, I think what we'll do is we'll try to bump over to my piece that I hunt and maybe run through a couple acres of that as well. So should be a pretty fun day. Now, one thing that I've been told is that I don't do a very good job of promoting what I'm doing. And I probably could agree with that. I'm not the kind of guy that is like, "Hey everybody, look at me, look at me, look at me." I don't like to do that, I guess. I just like to let my content speak for itself. But one thing I will say is that I have released 2 episodes. I think it's going to either be 3 or 4. I'm not 100% sure yet. I got to check with the guy doing the editing. But if you go to the Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel, you can check out the Sportsman's Nation page, and episode 1 and episode 2 of my South Dakota trip, where I brought a camera guy to film me this year, is up and running on that episode. So, or on that network. God dang, I can't even talk. Episode 1 and episode 2 of my South Dakota trip are actually up and running on that Sportsman's Nation YouTube channel. So go ahead and take a look at that. It's fun. I kill a buck. Something crazy kind of happens. And so go check that out. We had a lot of fun doing it. And I think I'm going to try to do a little bit more of that in the future. So go check that out. Instagram, Facebook, Nine Finger Chronicles. I'm not on TikTok, man, or some of those other platforms. I am on Go Wild, and I'd strongly suggest all of you get on Go Wild as well. But again, awesome episode today. I feel like I've taken up enough time already. I'm going to do a quick commercial, talk about Hunt Stand. What am I thinking about right now? I'm thinking about hunting. Right? So Hunt Stand digital map allows you to catalog everything that you find. But before you go out and actually hunt, I hop on Hunt Stand and I start scouring the places that I'm thinking about hunting, looking for terrain features, looking for food sources, looking for pinch points, you know, anything that may concentrate deer movement. Put a little mark there and basically wait. Wait until I get out there and go hunt those specific areas, and I see if it's worth it. Along the way from my truck to that point, I'm keeping my eyes open and I'm observing any deer sign, like rubs or scrapes or maybe another person's tree stand, or, you know, hey, I jumped a buck from this area, or whatever the case may be. I'm documenting everything. And what this does is the more dots and points you have on any surface or a graph or a map, it allows you to see where deer move and where deer do not move. And so you can remove where deer do not move and focus your attention on where deer do move. And that's just gonna give you higher success every time you step into the woods. So if you want to find out more information about HuntStand, visit huntstand.com. Wasp Archery, I am very happy to announce that they have decided to continue the partnership moving into 2022, all the way into 2023. Man, I tell you what, I love the guys that are at Wasp, one of the longest running partners here on the Nine Finger Chronicles. If you are looking for a very durable broadhead that is made from some of the best material that a broadhead can be made of, you need to go check out Wasp, wasparchery.com. I am a huge fan of two. They have new stuff, and they're always like, "Damn, why don't you promote our new stuff?" And I'm just like, "Listen, man, the jackhammer. I've had it on my bow now, off and on. Right? I took a break from Wasp maybe in 2008 or 9. I think I started with Wasp in 2006. I took a break, kind of going, you know, seeing what else was out there, and then came back to Wasp, and that's where I've been ever since. Huge fan of the jackhammer, 3-blade jackhammer. Huge fan of the Boss 4-blade. They have a variety of grains to choose from, whether that's 100 or 125, or you want mechanical or fixed blade. WaspArchery.com. Go check them out. Oh, man, I forgot. I'm really bad at this too, giving out discount codes. Wasp Archery, the number 9 followed by the word fingers, 9 fingers, 2021, 20% off. And then Hunt Stand is another one here, SN20 for 20% off your purchase. And then lastly, is Ozonix, right? I mean, I talk about the impacts of O3 a lot. And where do you get O3? You get it at Ozonix, right? It's a unit you bring into the tree with you. It emits O3, or otherwise known as ozone. Ozone is an unstable element that likes to bond to other elements, aka bacteria and odor and viruses and anything like that. So what it does is it distorts any type of scent profile that you are omitting out of your tree stand or your clothes have gathered throughout a day of hunting. So when a deer, let's say a deer does get downwind of you, when they put their nose in there and they're like, what's that smell? They're not getting a nose full of human scent. And it's distorted. And instead of thinking they're 10 yards away or 20 yards away, they may think that you're 50, 60, 70 yards away, and they don't spook. I mean, this is my experience with it. The only way you're going to really know how an Ozonix works is to borrow one from a buddy or get one yourself and spend some time in the tree with it. The impact it has outside of the stand is equally as important. I dry wash all of my hunting clothes and equipment in a ozone or in my dry wash bag before and after every hunt. And that keeps my clothes odor free going into the next hunt. And there's times when the wind's right, when the thermal's right, when I've taken care of my scent profile, both outside and inside the stands, I feel invisible in the woods. And I feel like that has led to some of my success in the woods as well. So if you want to find out about Ozonix, go to ozonixhunting.com. And if you do decide to purchase, enter the discount code NFC21 and get a free dry wash bag with purchase of one of their units. So commercials are done. Intro is done. Huge shout out to each and every one of you. And I say this every time, and I mean it every time. Thank you guys for continuing down this path for Nine Fingers. A lot of cool things coming, as always, not only on the network level and on the hunting gear podcast level, but on the Nine Fingers as well here. So stay tuned for that. And now let's get into today's, I guess we'll call it a 3-buck season with David McElwain. 3, 2, 1. All right, all the way from Mississippi, Mr. David McElwain. How we doing, man?
I'm good, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I tell you what, I don't talk to enough people from the South, and I'm going to really try to do a better job of incorporating, you know, the Alabamas, Mississippis, Louisianas, and Georgias, even Florida, Floridas of the world in this next year.
Yeah, it's definitely a different world down here, especially deer hunting.
Yeah.
It's a lot different, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I want to get you involved, because sometimes it's real easy in my little, my chair here in Iowa to stick with what's close in the surrounding Midwest, just because, you know, for some reason, it's probably just because of where I live, and I follow on Instagram, and just I know more people from the Midwest, but man, there's a lot of guys getting it done down South too.
Yeah, there is. Like I said, it's such a different world. Our rut is, you know, a good month and a half later than y'all's, and it's like, if you play the cards right, if you are able to, you can hunt the rut pretty much the entirety of November through January here.
Yeah,
it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. All right. So you've been on before, but before we kind of get into what we're going to talk about today, why don't you talk to me? Or just remind us, what do you do for a living?
So I am from North Mississippi, and I work for a camo company. I work for Mossy Oak in West Point. Yep. So I'm a photographer and producer and kind of social media manager for them, and that takes up the bulk of my time. And I freelance on the side, and it definitely keeps me busy throughout the day. But it allows me to be able to hunt more than I would say the majority of people, which is honestly what I wanted to try to design my life around is hunting. And somehow I stumbled upon this opportunity, and it's been a pretty good ride so far, I'd say.
Yeah, man, that's crazy. What's it like working for Mossy Oak? Because they're a company that has been around for a very long time. Like, when you think of some of the early adopters in the hunting industry, the Realtrees pop up, right? The Mossy Oaks kind of pop up. What's it like working for that company?
I really enjoy it, man. I'll tell you what. And you think, like, exactly what I guess the stereotype is. It's like Mossy Oak is the good old boys, it feels like. Even before I got in working with them, and they're from a town with less than 13,000 people. It's actually where I grew up here in West Point, a really small town. Great people. I really enjoyed working with them. They're very, very down to earth people. It's the good old boys, it feels like, and, working with them, you feel like family. So
yeah.
It's been a dang good experience working with them.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mossy Oak is one of those companies too, where I went on a rant the other day, and I started talking about how the hunting industry needs to do more about conservation, and do more about, talking about how hunting opportunities are being taken away and things like that. And there are a lot of companies out there that aren't doing very much. I feel like Mossy Oak kind of walks the walk in that aspect though.
They do. They do donate a lot of money and time to a lot of these organizations, and I know your frustrations 100% with a lot of other companies that will talk a big game and they don't follow through.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we can always do more.
Yeah.
I feel like
that's
we always need to do more.
That's a fact.
Like right now, for example, not for Mossy Oak, but in my backyard here in Columbus, Mississippi. We have a public land, WMA that they're trying to sell off right now. It's called Black Prairie. And it's going all over the news right now. A lot of the outdoor industry is talking about it, but they're trying to sell it off. And there's a meeting Monday, in Columbus, where they're going to try to sell this public land. And it's just, it's scary to think about that this is kind of where we're headed.
Yeah.
Cause I know this is happening all over the country, not just here. But this is just one small example of we need to protect our way of life and the opportunities we have. We can't take one step back. So we may lose it.
Yeah. And it's crazy. You think about that. So there's probably a guy out there who it is his favorite place in the world to be. You know what I mean? And he loves to go out there, whether it's just to kick rocks
breathe fresh air. Maybe he's a turkey hunter. Maybe he's a deer hunter. Whatever the case may be, that's his favorite place in the world. Now imagine his favorite place in the world being taken away from him. I can't imagine the gut-wrenching feeling that would be like. And maybe it's just one guy who feels that way. But I'll tell you right now, it's going to displace hunters. It's going to overcrowd the next area, right? And if that snowball continues, then it's like hunting is just left to landowners. And there's no other opportunities out there for guys who don't own land or don't lease hunting ground.
Exactly. And like you said, it displaces those other hunters onto the other lands we have, and kind of affects the hunting there. And it's not good all the way around.
Yeah.
It's not good all the way around.
Yeah. That's tough out there, man. I tell you what, and that's why we have to voice our opinions, right? Use our voice. So
you're exactly right.
I get this little text message from you. I posted a picture of my deer all the way back in October, and you're like, congrats on the big deer, man. If you ever get the chance, I'd love to talk with you again. And these words, best season ever, right? Like that's a bold statement from a hunter, right? And I tell you what, I had a really, really good season this year. I might put it in top five as far as success and adventure and all that stuff is concerned. So what made this past season the best season ever for you?
I think it was a mix of a lot of things. Good opportunity, good luck, I'd say. And, you know, I got to go to a few of the places that I've always wanted to go as far as hunting. And it was just the whole getting new people into hunting, watching them succeed and watching old friends succeed, making new friends. It was just, it was incredibly, I don't know if you call it lucky. I don't know if you want to call it lucky, but it was just, I got to watch a lot of mature bucks, go home with a lot of people this year.
That's awesome.
And it was phenomenal. I mean, it was one of those years where you're probably not going to replicate it many times, I would say, from my standpoint at least. And I know big deer here are a little different than your deer in Iowa, but you know there's some. It was a phenomenal year, that's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, and that doesn't matter, right? I bet you the antler size is something awesome to discuss, or the body size or the mature level is awesome to discuss, but I'm guessing it wasn't the best season ever for you just because of those categories.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was, like I said, the whole gamut of the getting new hunters in it and watching old friends and having some luck in between for myself. It was just, and regardless of the antler size, it was a dang good year.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I've killed quite a few turkey in my year. And as most of the listeners know, like, turkey hunting to me isn't really a thing that I go crazy about. A lot of guys do, but I don't. But one thing that I really like about turkey season is going with another person and calling for them. Yeah. And for some reason, I get a huge kick out of calling a turkey in for someone and then watching them shoot it. Like you get to watch the whole movie unfold instead of focus just on trying to kill them. So I don't know. I don't know about you, but that's,
I 100% agree with you. I 100% agree with you. That's the sharing of it is, and we don't get to do that as bow hunters and deer hunters that much, is sharing the opportunities with other people, but turkey hunting is cool in that aspect. And that's a whole different cat in a bag right there for people in Mossy Oak. They all think that I'm crazy for liking deer hunting way more than turkey hunting.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely the redheaded stepchild when it comes to that, but I like hunting deer more.
Yeah.
But nothing wrong with turkey at all, but it just, nothing gets me as fired up as a buck.
Right. All right. So last year, when does this best season of yours start? Is there a point where it kind of all kicked off, or was it like the whole season? I'm trying to get a timeline here of as it started to ramp up.
I'd say, okay, so October, probably 22nd, 21st, 22nd is when it kind of ramped up for me. And here in the South, and it's, I know the stereotypical people would say that mid-October is not very good. And a lot of places, if you're hunting the same places you are, early October versus late. But here it seems like mid-October is pretty phenomenal. I'd say that early October is pretty low activity here. But mid-October, it seems like there's new bucks showing up pretty regularly.
Yeah,
they're starting to come out in daylight a lot more, at least the areas that I'm hunting. And this year, about October 20th or so, I got a picture of a buck that I thought that I had him last year. Going back and realizing now I did not, but he showed up and he started showing up right on the edge of daylight. And where I'm hunting is it's a lot of there's a lot of hardwood, but there's a lot of pines mixed in. And of course, he's bedded in the pines, coming out almost every day to this food plot. And there's a bunch of does hitting and everything. I have a little food plot planted. Well, I go hunting. I'm going on a trip like the end of the week, so I'm hunting like say it's Monday. So I'm hunting him, and I go out the first day. I don't see him. I change stand locations. I run and gun every time I hunt, and switch stand locations where I thought another trail. Maybe he was trying to intercept him from his bed to his food plot. So change stand locations, set up, and sure enough, right at dark, he comes in. And it's right on the, it's almost closing time. Like it is like right on the edge of that, like being legal. And he walks in and I get the bow, start drawing it back. And I had noticed there was a couple of deer behind me. I thought maybe, you know, maybe they wouldn't see me. I'm kind of exposed on the backside of this tree. And I start drawing the bow back and one of the does busts me.
Oh boy.
And sure enough, the buck trots off. 30 more yards, stops, and he's looking around. And it's like I said, it's too dark to take a shot that I felt comfortable with. I mean, it's still legal shooting time, but he was standing in some tall grass. And it was just like, it was not, I did not want to take a pot shot at this buck. You know, yeah. I figured I had the rest of the season. So after that encounter, I didn't see the deer again for a few weeks on trail camera.
And you had left to go on another hunt too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. After that, I got to go to Wisconsin with a buddy of mine, Sam Kohler. And I went up to his family farm, and he kept telling me how many amazing encounters he's had up there. And I thought, okay, well, let's see how it is. And I go up there, and it was really good hunting, I'd say. It blew my mind. That's the first time I've ever hunted whitetail outside of Mississippi.
Yeah.
And just the sheer number of deer was pretty amazing. But it just seemed like the buck to doe ratio was a lot better. I went there the first day there, saw a couple of deer, not a ton, saw a couple of nice bucks. It was October 30th on this day. And, went out the next morning, had an encounter with a nice buck. It was just too far. And this is the first time this farmer's been hunted all year. They don't hunt it very much. They told me, guy, he said, hey, go down to the stand over here. You know, I was like, okay, well, I'll go. It's right behind that. It's right behind their house, pretty much. It's where, like, two ravines meet up, and there's a finger going out into the middle of it. So on the left side, it's a bedding area, and on the right side, it's more hilly and open. So I'm walking down this deer stand, and I get to it. I bust some does off like right beneath it. I thought, man, that's not good. But I thought it's getting close to the rut here. Maybe there's a buck around. So I get up in the deer stand and I'm about to put the tree arm or camera arm up. And I look to my left and I'm still standing up in the deer stand. And I look to my left and I can just see, I can see this white, rack. I thought it was a rack. And I thought, man, that would be so cool if there was a buck bedded down here. I have never been around a buck bedded down as far as seeing the stand and everything. I thought that'd be really cool if it was him. But it was so far away, I was like, it's probably not going to be him. I look with binoculars, and I can see two tines. And I'm like, that's a freaking buck. And I'm looking harder and looking harder, and I can see him. He turned his head. When he turned his head, I was like, that's a good deer. So, and he's way below me. He's in this drop-off, way below me. But I thought the way that he was bedded up, I could see a like a outcropping above him. So I thought, if I can get down and creep around this thing, the wind is right, I can get above him and get like a 30-yard shot. So I get down to the deer stand. I'm shaking the whole time. The tree's shaking, everything. So I get down, and I start crawling towards this thing. Take my shoes off, start crawling at him. And I get to probably 60 yards from him. I peek over, and it's a really nice buck, and it's one of the bigger deer that I've been able to hunt. And I'm looking at him, and I'm thinking, okay, well, he's bedded looking away from me. I can see him very clearly now. He's kind of angled to me, a little bit hardcore of a shot. I didn't want to take that shot. I thought I need to get, you know, 20 yards closer at least. So I start belly crawling. I get behind this tree, and I ease up behind this tree.
Is he bedded at this point, or is he on his feet?
He is bedded.
Okay.
He's bedded looking away from me, below me. And I get to this tree. It's a big like a Bodock tree. I get to it, and I ease up beside it, and I can see him. He's still looking away from me. He's alert and everything, but he's not paying me any attention. The wind's blowing just a little bit, so it's really helping me out.
So the wind is, is it blowing uphill in your face or kind of at a quartering angle?
It's at a cross.
Okay, gotcha.
He is just off my wind.
Gotcha.
He's like, I mean, if it switches a little bit, he could get me. So I ease up beside the tree, and I'm on my knees, and I have an air knock, and I'm just waiting for him to stand up. So I sit there for 20 minutes or so, and I'm watching. I get my cell phone out. I'm videoing him, trying to video him. I'm shaking so bad I can't see him really, but I'm trying to get it on video thing. So I'm supposed to be filming this hunt, and it's obviously not going to happen on the ground and after this debacle that I've had. I wait about 20 minutes, and he stands up, and I could tell, like, when he was going to stand up, he started looking around a lot more. I could tell my wind, he must have got a little bit of my wind. So the wind switches a little bit, and he starts looking around. And as soon as he, like, you know, dipped his head down and brought his butt up, I knew that he's standing up. So I drew and stood up. And as soon as he stood up, he started walking immediately out of his bed. And I tried stopping him, and I got a shot off at him and hit him a little back. And but immediately he ran up on the opposite hill and laid down. I thought, okay, well, that's an okay sign. I'm glad he laid down at least. Not the best shot I've ever made in my life, but at least he's bedded.
We talking liver or even further back?
A little further back, to be honest with you.
Okay, so you hit some guts.
It was dip. Yeah. Yes, I did get guts.
Yeah.
An awful, awful shot. And immediately when I shot him, I knew, I was like, that's not good.
Yeah.
I've made some bad hits in my life, and I knew that was not going to be the best track job. But what was weird is right when that happened, it honestly sounded like just a wave of deer coming at me up from up the valley. And I was like, man, what the heck is going on? And it was probably 15 deer just running at me full speed down this, like, a wave. I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. It felt like just like this rut, crazy, I don't know what it's called. But in the back of this, I see these two deer that are running straight at me. They get to, like, 20 yards, and I can hear a buck behind them grunting. And out pops this giant buck. I'm on the ground, and out pops this giant buck, and he runs to 7 yards from me. He's a big 8-point. I'm going to say he's between 150 and 155. Really big deer, one of the biggest 8-points I've ever seen. And he's running. He runs to 7 or 8 yards, and he has no idea I'm there. And he's looking around, looking for the does and everything, and he runs down the hill, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, like, where in the heck am I? Like, this has not happened in the South. this has not happened. So I go back to camp. I let the deer sit overnight, and we go in the next morning, and he's nowhere to be found. And I have chalked it up. As we look for hours and hours, and we chalked it up to I may not find this deer. Very little blood, but he actually circled back and came honestly close to where I shot him and walked into a bedding area, and he bedded down in some flower rows, and I just couldn't see where he was. And my buddy Sam, we were about to chalk it up, and he walked in there and found him.
Yeah.
And of course the celebration ensued after that. Everybody was really excited and everything. One of the better bucks I've ever shot. and it was an exciting experience, and yeah. I enjoyed the heck out of it. After that, five other people after that proceeded to shoot mature bucks within the next like 4 days.
Yeah,
and it was cool meeting new people and watching them succeed, because it was a couple of their biggest deer in their life, and they've been hunting hard this season. And watching them succeed was honestly more gratifying to me than my own.
Yeah. And I'll tell you this, man, it was almost like a celebration. It feels like a celebration of hunting, right? Especially when you tag out, you can be a part of the celebration, and then getting to witness other people and the excitement that what they've done brings to them, man, that's a huge positive energy blast right there.
Yeah. It's an amazing experience to see other people succeed.
Yeah.
Especially when you know they deserve it.
Yeah.
That's to me, that is hunting season.
Yeah. Now let me ask you something. How do you handle a gut shot like that, where you got to leave a deer overnight, man? I've made the mistake in the past where I've put a bad shot on a deer and I pushed him, and some of the times I found him, some of the times, man, I haven't found him. And I know the deer's going to die somewhere. And for me, you go back and you're just like, I feel like, I don't know, I have a guilty conscience. I'm that guy who, like when I was young, if I did something bad, I told my mom I did it. Like I couldn't just lie my way out of it or talk my way out of it. I had to admit my wrong. And and when you do something like that, for me, I feel like I've betrayed a friend, or I've lied to someone that I've loved. Like I get that really wrong feeling. How do you handle a bad shot like that, knowing that, hey man, there's a chance I don't find this deer?
Same as you. I usually don't tell, like, of course I'm in camp right here, and I tell everybody, of course, but like calling back home and saying, hey, I hit this deer back, I don't do that.
Yeah.
I don't say nothing to anybody until I know if I'm going to find it or I'm not going to find it. I keep quiet. I'm not that guy that's very boisterous and tell people. I'm kind of handling my own demons, because it feels like you said, it's that gut-wrenching, just awful, I may have just wounded this incredible buck.
Yeah.
And he's suffering right now. And I don't need to celebrate. I don't need to say anything to anybody. It's just like, it's my way of handling it. I'm not saying it's the right way, the wrong way. It's just, it's hard to think about for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it,
and
man.
And talking about it doesn't help me at all. So it's like,
yeah. It's just like this internal, it's an internal conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you, man. It sucks. But then you have this, you know, you walk up on this deer and it is a complete 360 or 180 for you.
Yeah. It doesn't feel real when you do it, and you think you've lost him, and it doesn't feel real. You're like, I heard Sam holler, and I was like, is he messing with me right now? He has to be messing with me. Like, this is not, but fortunately he wasn't.
Yeah.
And I walked up there and it was awful hit, but I got lucky. The Lord was looking out after me that day.
Yeah.
And it all worked out.
So describe this deer to us. How old do you think he was? What was the, what did he score if you put a tape to him?
I'm going to be honest with you. I did not put a tape to him.
Yeah.
I felt like everybody in the world wanted to know what he scored. And it was kind of nice to me just to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he scored. It was nice. But I'm saying he's at least 4.5. He may have been 5.5. I'm guessing 4.5.
Yeah.
He's a mainframe 10 with a couple of kickers off his base.
Nice.
I would say, if it was my guess, I'm going to say in the 150s.
Oh, buddy.
Low 150s.
Heck yeah.
For me, it was a phenomenal deer. I was happy. And to be able to shoot him off the ground, stalk, spot, and talk, that was, to me, it could have been a 6-point, and I would have had the same exact reaction. I'm like, that was a freaking cool experience.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this, man. I don't care what state you're hunting. 150, low 150s is an amazing deer. And the fact that in the same hunt, you saw a 150-inch eight pointer. Yeah. That's gigantic. A 150 inch eight pointer is a gigantic eight. Okay. I have a 154 inch. It's one of the only deer I've ever measured. And I did it from peer pressure from my stepdad. 154 mm-hmm. inch nine pointer. And he's gigantic downstairs. Right. So, yeah. I don't know, man. It's one of those things where, that's a people think that there's this benchmark for 170. I'm like, 170? What's this? Yep. Where's that coming from? 150 is yep. like top 5%.
Yeah, I can count on my one hand how many bucks I've seen at 170.
Yeah.
And especially 150. I mean, honestly, there's around in Mississippi at least, that does not happen very often. Like it's people don't realize how hard it is to get a deer to 140.
Yeah.
Here, and I feel like that people throw these numbers of they're shooting these big deer and they'll say, oh, 145, and you look at it and you're like, I don't know who measured that, but yeah. But I don't think that's people want to throw out these big numbers, and it's really hard. I mean, 140 inch 8 point is huge to me, and I 150 is like a gigantic deer.
Yeah.
And if you shot a 154 9 point, that's huge.
Yeah.
Like that is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, it's to me, it's about the experiences. And it sounds like we've both had some good experiences over our hunting career.
Heck yeah.
And that's just, it doesn't matter about the score. Like you said, I've scored one of my deer, one,
yeah.
like you. And I don't have to score the rest of them. Know that it's a deer makes me proud.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So buck one, check, right? Wisconsin, check. Great deer, you know, awesome deer. I actually just looked at it on Facebook here, or excuse me, on Instagram. That's a gorgeous animal. Okay. Happiness. That's a good start to the best season ever. What was the next thing?
So I came home. I got to go on a couple of trips and do some photography. Between that one and the next hunt, I get to hunt almost every day here in Mississippi, but weekends I've work a regular job like everybody 8 to 5, but on the weekends I try to travel and I do a lot of camping in my truck and travel around taking pictures. I got to go up to Tennessee and take some pictures of some elk, and after that came home, and I had a new buck that showed up on camera in a spot, you know, outside of town, and it was a buck that I had 100% recognized from the year before. Real tall tines, spindly rack, but definitely mature. And I've been hunting him. I hunted him the year before a little bit, but I knew as soon as I saw him the year before, I saw him on the hoof first time, and I knew he was a great buck. But I thought if he had one more year, maybe he would, you know, get a little bigger, jump up, or get some mass. And I decided not to shoot him. And he came through at 35 yards with a couple of does. It's like mid-December, and that's kind of when our rut kicks off. But he showed up, and my girlfriend wanted to hunt with me. I thought, you know, okay, well, I don't have a double set. You can go sit. We'll just go sit on the ground. And just like the last time I'm walking in, we set up, and we hadn't seen – much activity, I'd say, for the first like hour and a half, and then a doe pops out, probably 100 yards, and this is rifle season in Mississippi. I have a rifle at this point. Doe pops out, and then another little buck, and it's getting close to. It seems like all these stories, like all my bucks are coming out right at the edge of legal shooting time, but yeah. This one pops out. Legal, like it's still. I got about 10 minutes left, I'd say, and he pops out at 110 yards, and ended up. I watched him for a couple of minutes. I was kind of debating on letting her try to shoot him because I'm like, you know, she's never shot a buck before. Like this is her first hunting season ever. She's from Maine. This is her first hunting season ever. But you know, I wanted to. I don't know how you feel about this, but like starting a new hunter off on like a really big buck, I'd rather them not do that because I feel like the rest of their hunting career, they're going to be like, that first buck is our best one, and I like working up. I feel like I don't know how you feel about that.
I've talked to guys, like multiple guys, who their first deer ever, one was a muzzleloader kill, and another one was an archery kill, and one was like a 180s, and another one was a 170s, and they both admitted that it ruined the first 10 years of their hunting because they were trying to chase antler size instead of going out and trying to kill deer, like just kill deer, period. And so they're just like, man, it's great that I got this deer on the wall and it's an awesome story, but it kind of ruined the progression of how everything else works.
Yeah, that's you'd rather shoot later on in your hunting career that you worked hard for and you worked a long time for it. And that's just, you know, that's my opinion. I would rather not shoot, you know, one of the bigger bucks that I see here. I mean, and here I would say it's really hard to come by, right? A 130 is, I would say, is kind of average. Once you start getting into the 140s, that's pretty rare, I'd say, around here. Yeah. Where at the places that I hunt, there's definitely a big deer around. But a 140-inch deer is kind of the benchmark for a really, really nice buck.
Yeah.
But anyway, this buck comes out, and he's 100 and so yards. I decide that I'm going to shoot him. I shoot him, and once again, I have it on video. I video the hunt and everything, and watch the video, and I think I hit the deer good. And I'm thinking, okay, we're great. I see his front shoulder ripple when I shot him. It was perfect, I thought. And
what was this with? A muzzleloader?
No, this is with a rifle.
A rifle. Okay,
Yeah, I'm shooting a .308. Like, that's 100 and so yards. Like, I felt very confident. Go back and watch the video. It's great. Go back to my house. We hang out for a little bit. Just kind of give him like extra time. Why not? No rush. So we drive back to where I was hunting. Walk in there, and we can't find any blood. And I'm thinking, this is Wisconsin 2.0, I feel like. I thought this was a good shot. And we couldn't find him. And I come back the next day, and she couldn't be with me, but ended up finding the deer. But what had happened was I hit him in the front shoulder. He was semi-angled, but he took one long step, and I hit him in that front shoulder, and it hit him in the front shoulder and threw the brisket. And it was just, it didn't bleed. I think he died relatively quick, honestly, but it was just one of those, I don't know what happened inside of him where he didn't bleed. But there was not a drop of blood, on him. And actually I ended up having to get a tracking dog and, they found him relatively quick then.
Yeah.
Didn't go super far, but you know, it was not one of those clean kills that you want, like to walk up on like that night.
Yeah.
Whenever you have to, like we talked about, whenever you have to leave a deer overnight, it sucks, man. There's no sleep involved, and it sucks to think about possibly that deer's suffering, which I'm glad he wasn't, but it hurts.
Yeah. It's a gut wrenching feeling. And obviously you found him. As far as what these two bucks were doing, I know it's two completely different environments, but as far as what they were doing from, let's talk a strategy standpoint. And obviously, one's with a bow and one's with a gun, right? So you can reach out a little bit further with a gun than you can a bow. But as far as maybe terrain or what these deer were doing, was there any trends or similarities between the two?
Yep. So 100%, I feel very confident at least. The first buck was definitely watching the bedding area that these does were coming out of. As I was sitting on top of the hill looking, I could see does on the other hillside that were coming out of this bedding area and this buck was bedded down looking and watching them. And there is getting close to the rut there whenever I shot him. So I felt very confident. Okay, he's just in a bed just to watch these deer. And as they come out, I'm sure he'll start checking for hot does. The second one, I don't feel like he was definitely not in a rut mode. He was more in a feed, I would say, and just coming out of a he was in his traditional bedding area that he has been for the past 2 years, and we have no topography in Mississippi whatsoever where I am. It's as flat as can be, and but there's little sections inside of these bedding areas that usually hold bucks over others, and I'm sure it's like that everywhere. There's places that bucks bed, and there's places that does bed. And it seemed like this one, he was not in a, like I said, a breeding mood at all. Like, he was just like straight coming out to feed, going towards some bigger ag fields. And I just happened to catch him in between.
Yeah.
So I don't really feel like there was any similarities with those two. But of course, I think the second buck was late November. So it's a little early for our rut. If I had any days to hunt in Mississippi, it'd be the first 7 or 8 days of December.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. But no, I don't believe there's any many similarities, though, so.
Yeah, yeah. So this buck, I love the characteristic of he's pretty tight and tall.
Yeah, yep, very tight and tall.
A 10, right?
Not a ton of, yes.
Yeah.
Clean 10. Buck I was very, very happy with. I mean, it was a good experience and everything. And it was cool. I knew as soon as I got a picture of him, he had a very, like, distinct rack to me. Like, on the stroke cameras, I could definitely tell it was him from 1 year to the other. He didn't change a whole lot at all. He reminded me of, like, a Texas deer. It just, not a whole lot of mass, but just long and skinny, I'd say.
Yeah.
And his main beam, like, I don't know. It wasn't like other deer around here. It was just like, it kind of like curled up. I can't explain it. But on trail camera, it was very easy to recognize from 1 year to the next. That was him.
That's awesome. So did you find any sheds to this buck because it's, you know, something that kind of a deer that you've been following?
Yeah. No sheds at all.
Gotcha.
It's so hard to find sheds here. It seems like I've joked around. I swear I think these deer hide their sheds. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, it's so thick here, and we don't have a whole lot of ag fields that are hitting late in the season. It's just not many people find sheds at all. And when you do, it's usually during turkey season. It's very common for us to be turkey hunting and seeing bucks walking around with antlers.
Yeah.
It's strange. So I'm pretty jealous that y'all get to go out and shed hunt.
Yeah.
I am very jealous of that. I've always wanted to do it, but it's just not something that's not super feasible here.
Yeah. We just got like 5 inches of snow last night. So,
really?
My shed hunting is on pause for right now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but
it's been 70. It was 75 here yesterday.
Yeah. Crazy. It was 50 last week. It was 50 something for one day, and then it went back
really?
To the teens. So here we are today, we're sitting at about 23 or something like that right now, but we got 5 inches of snow. So shed hunting is, you know, back to work, and shed hunting's put on pause for just a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure once it is game time, though, I'm sure it'll be good year for you.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So Mississippi check, right? The train keeps rolling on this perfect season, or this awesome season that you had. So what was next? Do you got another Mississippi tag in your pocket, or did you go to a different state?
Yeah, it's Mississippi, which is kind of crazy to think about, but we get 3 bucks here.
Okay.
It's kind of crazy. I wish they would maybe rethink that a little bit. But you get 3 bucks and 5 does.
Yep.
And you can shoot 5 does in one day here. We have a lot of deer. Not a lot of mature deer, I'd say. But the next hunt, I went and filmed a hunt in Kansas the day after that buck. So I left for Kansas, went and filmed a hunt there. Was not successful. It was just super warm weather. It was like December. In December, like the first couple of days of December.
Yeah.
But it was really warm and just was not happening. We went to southeast Kansas, and this was for Mossy Oak. Filmed that one. And obviously, you know, when you're filming a hunt with other people, I'm wanting to be back home hunting myself.
Yeah.
Like, I can't help it. It's just like, you know, you want to get back in the woods. And I'd already chalked the season up as like, okay, this is a really good season. If I don't even get to pull the trigger again for another buck, that's perfectly fine. Like, that's,
yeah.
I'm not going to be greedy on this or thing. And so I filmed that hunt, no success, come home. And when I come home, the buck that I had almost drawn back on in archery season has shown back up. And immediately I was like, all right, well, game on. Here we go again. And so after that, I kept getting pictures of him, and he was coming from the neighbors. I could tell which direction. The way that I had my camera set up, I could tell. I was like, if he comes from the left, he's coming from a area that I can hunt. If he comes from the right, this long stretch of timber, he's not coming from me more than likely. And so I just sat back and waited for a couple of days before it got into a good rut. And I finally got one. I was only getting a few pictures of him, but I got one picture of the deer, and he was coming from my area.
Okay.
And I thought, okay, well, that means he is bedded on mine during the day, more than likely.
How many acres are you talking about here that you have access to?
This is 42.
42 acres, okay.
This is 42. Not a very big chunk, but he is coming from mine, and I have very good bedding on mine.
Yeah. Good neighbors, as far as, you know, is it a neighborhood that is all kind of after the same thing?
I honestly don't think so. I think that it's decent, I'd say.
Yeah.
Most deer get to, they have the ability to get a little older.
Yeah.
But there's been a few instances where a couple of really young deer were shot, and I was like, maybe they don't feel the same way I do. I don't know.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be disclosing this information, but it feels like all my neighbors are trying to figure out. They don't know who hunts the property next to them, and I try to be very secretive about where I hunt.
Yeah.
But it seems like, and I always get these messages on Instagram and everything of, where did you kill that? And I'm like, I'm not telling you where I kill that deer.
In Mississippi.
in the woods. That's all you need to know. But I get a picture of the deer, and he's coming from the area that I can hunt. I go in there the first day. I go into work early. I get there at like 6 o'clock so I can leave at 3 just to get my, you know, my hours in and everything. And I leave at 3 o'clock. I go in. And I set up a stand, it's a transition area between hardwoods and pines and like a CRP, I'd say.
Kind of the perfect where it sounds like three different edges meet.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is the perfect, like, and there's a little bit of a change in topography. Just probably 10 feet, if that.
Yeah.
And this area is a low point in this area that these bucks will travel. So I set up on this low point. My wind's coming from the south, and I'm around the edge. I'm on a pine tree, but I can shoot to the hardwoods. So, and as I'm setting this thing up, I'm thinking, okay, this deer could be bedded with me anywhere in here. I have no idea, just because these deer are so sporadic. So I set up, get up and stand, and I'm there for 10 minutes. And self-admittedly, I'm looking at my phone, you know checking what's going on Instagram, you know, kind of killing a little time before it gets good. And I catch a doe coming out of the CRP building, the edge of my eye, and I'm watching her, and she's coming on a beeline right at me. I'm thinking, okay, well, that's weird that she's by herself this time of year, but great. I'm glad that, you know, she's coming right here. And 40 yards from my stand, I see a rack bedded down. It's right where the doe came from, and then it stands up. And of all deer it could be, it's the deer that I went in there after. And he stands up, shakes off. It's 4 o'clock. Like there's plenty of daylight, and he makes a beeline and walks right to me, 15 yards, turns broadside, and I get a shot at him. And it sealed the deal for like, wow, I don't know what lucky charm that I have in my pocket, but this has been a dang good year. Ended up finding the deer very, very quick. Didn't run very far at all. And, it was just it was a cap to a good year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a pretty buck. I was very excited over it. It just felt surreal, I'd say.
Yeah. So was this with a bow or a rifle again?
Yes.
A bow.
It's with a bow.
Okay.
Yeah, with a bow.
And another thing that makes it so sweet, obviously it's an awesome deer, right? I would. What did you say again? In the high 140s.
Yeah, I would say, I would honestly say high 130s, maybe.
Oh, 130s. Okay.
Maybe 140s. I'd say.
Okay.
It's a great deer for here. I'd say.
Yeah.
But it's just so hard to get a deer over 140 here. I mean, it's so hard, and I don't ever want to be that guy that says, oh, he was in the 145s. I don't want to say that. Like, I want to just say he was, I would say low 140s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mid 130s, I'd say. I just don't measure my deer, like you said. It's just,
yeah. It sucks because I'm here on a podcast, right? And I have to try to, I'm trying to bring a visual representation of words, right?
you're having to score these deer on the fly and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
And pictures are so deceptive.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Pictures are so deceptive with people. But just a long time, 10 point, not very wide in, a little bit darker antlers, but just a clean 10, no kickers at all. It was a pretty Mississippi buck.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. And so you shoot this deer. There's no problems with finding this deer. And so you're just like, man, like at this point, you got to just be like, what? I should play the lottery. What is going on, dude, right? Like how jacked were you once you've, had the opportunity to put three really good bucks down in a single year?
You know, I've never been in the situation. I have never been in the situation of killing. I've killed two bucks in a year. I've never killed three. But I've never been in a situation I was like, I was so proud of each one that I didn't want one to take precedence over another one. I was just so excited. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, it was a feeling of like, every one of these deer mean, I would have been happy with one deer a year. Because I can, when you kill one deer a year, you appreciate every single thing about it.
Yeah.
And, like, you think about it the rest of the year, and that's your thoughts the rest of the year. Like, I want to get that opportunity again. But killing three, it was kind of like, I don't know, like, I didn't feel like I deserved it. But then I didn't feel like I should appreciate one over the other. But I was, just to answer the question, I was very, very happy.
Yeah.
Appreciative. Didn't feel like I was deserving. And just happy that it was a really good year, man.
That's awesome.
And, and then after that, my whole goal was to get my girlfriend a buck. And ended up finding one. Actually found and scouted one, I thought, was a really good deer. I was like, I don't know how I feel about her shooting this thing. But it was a different area, a completely different scenario. I saw one come out into an ag field, and I thought, okay, well, tomorrow we need to be here within 100 yards where he came out.
Yeah.
And so we go in the next day, and she's never shot a deer before. So like I said, this is her first hunting season. And there's a pond that I wanted to check out because there's always some deer that are bedded down beside it. It's like an island in the middle of this huge field. So I walk in and I walk over this pond levee, and I'm looking through it, and I just like it, it. I get to go western hunting every once in a while, and I never make very good spots, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I was so proud of myself for this one. Like, I popped over this levee and saw one tine, and I thought, I think that's a buck over there bedded down. And I watch it for 5 minutes or so. She's kind of below me, and I'm watching it, and I finally see it move, and I'm like, holy shit, that's that buck. We have found that buck in this huge area right here. He's bedded down 100 yards from us right here. Like, okay, sweet. So I get her up there. We're set up, and we're waiting for him to stand up. And if he takes a step, if he stands up and goes left or right, we got a shot. The only way we can't shoot him is if he stands up and walks straight away from us.
Yeah.
And we sit there for about an hour, and of course, like big deer do, he stood up and walked straight away from us. So we grab our stuff, run around the edge, run up to the top of the hill kind of where he went over, and we can't see him because there's a little bit of a rise out of the field. So I just climb up an oak tree and just climb the limbs and get up there, and I can see like 10 deer out there and then him. But there's no way we can get close. So
yeah.
We kind of watch him for a while, and it turns dark and everything, and it just doesn't happen that day. But we decided, let's try it again tomorrow. We'll set up a different spot, maybe. Pop over. He's not at the same spot he was, obviously. So we go around on the edge of this field, at the corner of this ag field. We set up on the ground on the our backs up against a big old oak tree, and a buck pops out at 150 yards and walks straight to us. It walks to, I'd say, 40 yards from us, and she shoots it. And it was not the buck that we saw the day before, but it was still a nice, a really nice buck for her.
Yeah,
it was a 10 point, just a young, a great representation for a young buck. I mean, it was perfect for her, and she was happy. But it was another good season. That's our good season for her, and everybody wins.
Yeah,
it seems like
man.
I don't know why. I don't know why this year has just been a. I don't know why certain years you have, but it seems like when you are on a roll, if you can take the time to appreciate it while you're in the moment,
yeah,
it's like yeah,
yeah. And you know, sometimes a year can go by, you shoot a deer and you're just like, awesome, this is awesome. But then you take a step back. And for me, I'm starting to get this with my, like, I'm looking in, I'm in my office right now. I'm looking at my deer skull plate because, you know, the hide's at the taxidermist and I'll eventually have to bring that in. So I got, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at my Euro mount from this past season from my South Dakota. I'm looking at sheds that me and my wife have found over the years, pictures and more shed antlers. And then downstairs every morning when I drink my coffee, I look at all the mounts and all these memories. And it's just, it stacks and stacks and stacks and snowballs. And then it's just, I don't know, man. And then you really do feel jacked about not just one season, but the entire process and the entire, all the years that the culmination of how it started and where you're at now. And it's a really good feeling.
Yeah. It's an amazing feeling.
Yeah.
And it's something we can't take lightly for being a hunter. Because it could be taken away one day. We have to fight for it.
Absolutely. And then, now here's the real question. You got wall space for all those deer?
I live in a little apartment, and I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I got two of them skull mounted, and I'm gonna get the Wisconsin buck. It's getting mounted, but hopefully one day when I'm moving to a little bigger place, I have a little room. I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I guess that's a good problem to have, I guess.
Yeah, that is definitely a good problem to have. Well, I tell you what, man, congratulations on one hell of a season. It's, I don't know. I get jacked up for my own hunts when I hear the success that other people have had and the excitement in your voice and the stories that you've shared, not only with yourself, but those around you. And it being one of your best seasons ever, man. So congratulations, and thanks for taking time to hop on this podcast.
Man, I really appreciate the time, Dan. I've enjoyed the heck out of it. And I appreciate it. I'm glad that you had a great season as well.
And there we have another episode in the books. Huge shout out to David, man. I really appreciate your time on the phone today. Congratulations on a stellar season. Huge shout out to each and every one of you for taking time out of your day to listen up. Man, it means a lot to me. Just seeing the downloads and the analytics on my side, I'm very appreciative of everybody who follows along and everybody who listens. So thank you for that. And man, this life, this world we live in is crazy. And I think there's no better time to be a positive person than right now, because positivity is, and I know I sound like a hippie and some people will hear me and maybe cast a little judgment on what I'm about to say, but this is like, if you omit positive energy, the person standing next to you is going to get some of that and they're going to be positive. And then it starts this chain reaction, right, of positive energy, and boom, that person is positive, and whoever he touches in his life is positive. And the next thing you know, we have this community of positive people who are able to shed the negative and absorb the positive, and then that just makes us better people overall, right? So be kind to your neighbor. Good vibes in, good vibes out. Wear your safety harness, and man, we'll talk to you when we talk to you. Thank you. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.